We do not control the outcome of our children's lives or our relationship with them. It's very humbling. There's this brief little period that we think is so hard, you know, when we have to get up in the night with them and change their diapers and drive them to soccer. But those are the easy days, actually, when it's still within our reach. And then you chose a quote very, very wisely from the book. Then they tell us who they are and what they believe, and it may not always be what we want to hear.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
I'm Joyce Maynard, author of a whole lot of books, baker of a whole lot of pies, mother of several children who were long launched into the world, and author of a new novel that's just out called How the Light Gets In, which is, I think, what we're going to be talking about today, but who knows what we're going to be talking about. Sylvia and me.
Joyce, thank you so much. What a great introduction. And of course, we're going to be talking about that. But your book actually encompasses so much that we're going to be able to hit on to so many points about family and motherhood and so on and so forth. And
you know, Sylvia, I turned 70 years old last November, a number
Mazel that tov.
Once, thank you. I consider it an accomplishment.
It's a fantastic accomplishment.
And I, at this point, I have a lot to say, and How the Light Gets In really is everything I wanted to say about family and marriage and the end of a marriage, raising children, seeing them go out into the world, growing older. So it's not a short book, in other words. It's the book that I wish I could have read when I was younger.
Well, you see, that's the thing about us getting older, not old, but older. And, you know, some people will, you know, it's something I say all of the time is the fact that we can write, you know, as you said, you've written a ton of books. In fact, I think your first published stories was when you were 13 years old. Mm-hmm. But as we get older, there's so much that we've lived through, accomplishments, failures, just moving on and just living each day. And I think, and I hope that people, as we get older, realize that every day is a new day.
That's certainly a part of the message of this book. And, you know, we get perspective, don't we? The things that seemed so important, so many of them when I was young, no longer do. And letting go of a lot has left me very good at letting go. And so this is a book about that. I think about resilience.
Big time.
I don't think you get to this age without having had loss. And I certainly have. I lost one marriage to divorce and lost a very good husband to cancer 8 years ago. And, you know, we've lost our parents. I've lost my knees doing what they used to do. But along with that come many gifts, don't there? And I celebrate those. One of the big ones for me is forgiveness. This is a book about forgiveness.
Yes, it is. And it's a complex story. It's three generations of family spanning over 15 years from 2009 to 2024. And in it, you have real events that have taken place in the country, along with how a very diverse family deals with it and how a mother deals with it. And there's one sentence that I just love that you have in there. We don't tell our children who they should be. They tell us.
Yeah.
And I know that, you know, sometimes you were talking about one particular son in this book, But I think it has to do with all of them.
Yeah.
With you know, Toby, who had an accident when he was about 4 and has a brain injury. Another child who was born as a female, Allison, who is now Al, happily married with children. And another, you know, her daughter, Ursula, where there's so much, you know, they're separated from,
estranged.
I need help with the bigger words. And they are estranged. And, you know, I look back and I see how some of that happened. You're talking about divorce and death. Well, this is a woman who we start off. It's a sequel to one of the other books that you wrote,
Two Ways.
And, you know, her husband, she's divorced. Her husband, she finds out, is dying. And this woman, Eleanor, actually goes back to care for her husband.
Yeah. You know, some women got angry about that. The part where she makes that decision was in the first book, Count the Ways. And you don't have to have read Count the Ways to enjoy and appreciate How the Light Gets In. But I think it's a great idea, of course. Between the two of them, they span about 50 years
yes.
in the life of a woman and a family. And some women got really, some readers got really upset that Eleanor would do this and said, you know, she keeps on sacrificing herself for everybody else, which, as we know, is one of the things that women do. And it is my job as a writer not necessarily always to tell the way life should be, but the way life does unfold. So the new book starts with her in the aftermath of, not a spoiler because you find this out right away, the death of the man that she was no longer married to, but cared for.
Well, because you said that, I'm just going to read this very short. I happen to have it here. You know, you said women got mad at you, but you have, if you loved someone deeply once, you've had children with that person. If there had been a time when the two of you called yourselves a family, the connection could never fully disappear. Cam, her husband, who's dying, had been many things to Eleanor in the past, lover of her youth, father of her children, witness with her to the worst event of their lives. He'd also betrayed her. So you didn't sugarcoat it.
No.
And, you know, yes, everyone has their own opinion. But, you know, to get angry, that means there's so much anger within that
I have trouble getting rid of. I have to say, I feel I'm doing my job. If a reader is getting upset, then that means that she's really involved in my book. And so I did get letters that, you know, women would say, I threw that book down on the ground. But the important thing to me was that then they picked it up and kept on reading.
Exactly.
So yes, I love to. I want to keep you up all night reading. I want to make you cry. I want to make you maybe angry and come out the other end of that. And all those things happen to me while I'm writing, I have to say. I completely give myself over to these characters. They're like my family. They are a family.
Well, I don't know if you know this. I just finished reading a book. I got an advanced copy of a book by a French novelist, Colombe Schneck. I'm probably not saying her name, Colombe. Swimming in Paris.
Don't know.
Which is about a woman's personal journey through abortion, sex, friendship, love, and swimming. And in it, she writes, I had read Joyce Maynard's account of the tragic end of her relationship, gasping with horror, even while we were still together. You're mentioned right in there.
I feel that readers are the other half of the conversation that is essential to me. When I write a book, I'm putting out my half, but I can't wait to hear what readers have to say back. As you may know, I'm about to head out all across the country on a book tour, and I just can't wait to share this story and to hear back what people have to say.
Because you never know.
And
it could all be the center of a brand new book for you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Sylvia, you mentioned that I include in my novel, in How the Light Gets In, a lot of real events that took place during the period of the years that the novel covers. And that's true of Count the Ways, too. Count the Ways is from the 70s through 2009. So we've got, you know, the Vietnam War, the Challenger exploding, and many other things. A woman said to me one time, you know, I really love your books, but do you have to be so political? And I said, I never think of myself as being political in my books. I don't offer my own opinions on things, but how on earth could we situate a novel between the years 2010 and 2024 and not include what's going on in the world, not include the Trump years, of course, but not my views on them. It's part of what we experience as human beings in America. We're the TV's on, the radio, the music that's playing, that's the stuff, the backdrop of our days.
Exactly.
In Count the Ways, we have the daughter of the main character, the mother. Yeah. Eleanor is obsessed with Krista McAuliffe, and she goes off to school on that January 28th, 1986, wearing her little spacesuit. Well, we all know what happened. And that was a very personal way of exploring a national event, which it definitely is something that I do. In the new book, Eleanor throws a party, as I did. I guess you'll get my politics here, but Eleanor throws a party with her friends to celebrate what she thinks is going to be the election of the first woman president. And that night doesn't turn out the way she thought. Well, that's not politics. That's life.
That's life. That's life. And people can relate to that. It is so much life. And then you have, you know, the daughter and her husband and his thinking and politics is so different from many. And so you have that within families. How can you not, you can't ignore that. You can't sugarcoat everything.
I think that's one of my jobs as a writer, Sylvia, is to open up the conversation about things that we sometimes have a hard time talking about. And yes, there is a character who is the absolutely devoted, loving husband of one of Eleanor's children, who becomes so alienated from a lot of things going on in the world that he becomes very involved in this, you know, sort of militia movement. And he goes to our nation's capital on January 6th. I didn't want to make him a villain. I wanted to explore how that man got to that place and give him humanity. And as I do, I hope, every character, this is not a novel about parental estrangement, but I will say that I have, in the last 10 years, encountered so many stories from really loving, devoted, flawed parents, of course, goes without saying, whose adult children have cut off connection with them. It's something that a lot of people don't talk about, but a lot of people experience it. So I wanted to put that in a book, and I wanted to open up the conversation about parental estrangement, about so much that happens in our lives.
And that's it. And sharing stories, storytelling. Didn't you have a podcast about that?
I do indeed. I do indeed.
Okay. So if we don't tell our stories, if we think that we need to keep them in, just think, you have people talking, you have people who are saying, oh, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Me too.
Yeah. It's fantastic. And that's part of our job.
I've been, one of the things that I've been doing for the last 30 years, mostly I've been writing. That's my big thing that I've been doing besides, you know, raising my family. But I have been teaching a memoir workshop for women at my home for 30 years. So I've heard a lot of women's stories. It feels like a sort of sacred trust that women have shared stories sometimes that they'd never shared with anybody else. And it's been a huge education for me and a gift that once you know somebody's story, you can understand them. You can almost, you might not agree with them, but suddenly you forgive them, or you open up your heart in new ways. So I believe in stories. I believe in telling stories and listening to stories.
Listening is very important. And when people read your stories, I mean, if they read How the Light Gets In, when they read it, not if, but when they read it, you know, they're listening to the story. You know, the words just jump off the page.
Speaking of which, I actually, you literally can listen to it. I'm a huge believer in my books on audio. I will not let anybody record my books but me. So I think it's a great way to hear it on audio.
It is. I mean, I go back and forth. You know, sometimes I want to hear the character in my own head the way I want. And sometimes I think it's absolutely fantastic to hear how somebody else portrays. And especially if you, the writer,
I know these people better than anybody.
You know, exactly. So that is absolutely a fantastic way of hearing the story, of actually closing your eyes and being able to picture it, because you do know the character better than anyone else. I just, you know, as I said, I believe that there was so much in there. You hit on so much.
Did I make you cry? Were there places that
there were places? You know, the mother's trying so hard, especially with her estranged daughter, because she has two grandchildren. And I know I have a 2.5-year-old grandson, and he is the light of my life. And, you know, I hear her as she's walking on eggshells so that she can be a part of that family, a part of her grandchildren's, because we're here. I mean, you know, we take our kids, they fly off, and we want those grandchildren, you know, one, yeah.
I'm hoping that that part of the story will be both comforting to people who have experienced estrangement and enlightening for people who haven't. I think one of the things that happens when people are estranged from adult children is that they are judged. They are, yes. You know, people will say, if not out loud, probably not out loud, what terrible thing must she have done?
Because it's always the parents' fault. It's always the mother's fault.
It's always the mother. And what I believe now is that we do not control the outcome of our children's lives or our relationship with them. It's very humbling. There's this brief little period that we think is so hard, you know, when we have to get up in the night with them and change their diapers and drive them to soccer. But those are the easy days, actually, when it's still within our reach. And then you chose a quote very, very wisely from the book. Then they tell us who they are and what they believe. And it may not always be what we want to hear.
A lot of times it isn't.
No. And acceptance is a lesson of this age, too.
Yes, it is, especially in the days that we're going through. Yes. It's very, very, very big. You know, self-knowledge that Eleanor, the mother, experiences. I know that you've experienced it. I know that, you know, that I have. You know, you're telling their stories, and Eleanor has moved so, there's so much going on in this particular part. A woman who's divorced, she's estranged from one of her children. At the beginning, and I'm sure it's at the end of the prequel to it, you know, going through a divorce, she moved out of the family's home. She gave her ex-husband that home, moved into a condo apartment with the three children, and one by one, you know, it's usually the person who the children see as being alone. So that would be the dad. So a lot of times the blame goes to the person who made that supposedly in their head and their young children, that person be alone. So the alienation, you can sort of see where it's going. And well, one child has an argument with a mother. Well, go to daddy's.
Yeah, there's always that.
There's always that. And so for you to put it in such a way is such a gift to people who don't understand.
Well, I was a single parent for many years. Mm-hmm. And I that wouldn't be what I choose to know a lot about, but I do. And I wanted to portray the struggle. And let's not, I want to make sure that I mention that this book, in addition to struggles, also has some real joy.
It's got fantastic joy.
I wanted to give Eleanor a love affair, a real love affair. And I thought a lot about, you know, what sort of love affair it would be and who the person would be. I also knew that I didn't want any man to be the answer to her life, to make everything okay.
And you did that perfectly.
So yes, I gave her a love affair, and no, that doesn't mean everything gets fixed by the great hero who comes galloping along on his white steed, you know. But I wanted Eleanor to, I wanted to show Eleanor, my main character, go through the stage of taking care of everybody else and sacrificing for everybody else to the place that I have finally reached, and that I think many of us have, a finally sort of looking up over the, you know, the water and saying, now it's my time. What do I want? And what do I need? And recognizing that she deserves it.
And as I said, it's done so beautifully, and with humor, and with, you know, the strength of this woman who has, as you said, been taking care of so much and trying to fix things.
As we do.
You know, this trying to fix, trying to make our children happy, when we finally, and it's that same quote I did, when we finally realize that our children are going to tell us who they are, and we, just because we think they should be happy doing something, it's just not, we have to let them be them. We have a job in keeping them safe as we can, giving them as much information as we can, hoping they grow up with the morals and work ethic and so on and so forth, and are able to take care of themselves, because that's very important, to be independent. And even her son, Toby, is quite independent, even though, and I'm not giving this away because it's, you know, in any of the reviews, he had a brain injury when he was 4, but he also is independent. So
he's, to me,
he's so fantastic.
He's almost the heart of this book.
He's
a hero. I love him. And he has this great wisdom to him. I wanted to give him a good love affair too, and I won't give away what I came up with, but I had to deal with his very real challenges. But I had such a wonderful time writing this book and spending those months with these characters. I actually miss them now. So it, for me, seeing this book published and is a way of getting to visit them again.
Well, as I said at the beginning, there's, I'd love for you to read.
Wonderful.
Two pieces.
You made a great choice, actually. The one that you suggested, is one that I like to read myself. So good for you. This comes near the end of the book, but it doesn't give anything away.
No, it doesn't. That's why.
Eleanor understands now what it is she failed to recognize over all those years. With her gaze perpetually focused on what was gone, she had failed to recognize not simply what remained, but what lay ahead, a rocky and winding path she and her family might never have discovered if not for all the times they had gone off course. And that, you know, that connects with the title too, which you might recognize is a line from a Leonard Cohen song. The first part of the line is, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And to me, it's not the perfect things, the uncracked that shows us the greatest beauty. It's the imperfection. It's the crack in everything. And that's how the light gets in, isn't it?
The one other piece.
Yes.
Actually, it's just the essence. It doesn't give anything away.
This line, I'll tell you the origin of this line before I read it. It was actually spoken to me in Yiddish by my mother's second husband when she was dying of a brain tumor. And I don't actually know Yiddish, so he had to tell me what he had just said. And I cannot say it in Yiddish, but it is a saying, I think. If you live long enough, everything happens. The good and the terrible. And it may be the case, it probably is, that a person's glorious triumphs seldom serve as the best teachers of what it means to be human. The lessons are all in the failures.
How true. How very true. And you know, people get stuck by their failures.
Me too.
Instead of, you know, saying, okay, you know, I've learned something from it. Step back a little. You know, we
don't stop learning, do we?
No, no.
I hope not. I hope I never do.
I want to, we can't end this without talking about why music is so important to you and the playlist that you made for this. And the three, I want you to talk about how the title came about and then the three musicians.
There are a million. There are probably.
I know. But
40 that I, so first of all, it's a part of our lives. The songs that we're playing, it's one way to know a character, to know what music makes her cry or makes her want to get up and dance. I can't play music while I'm writing, but I often play music before I write to get myself in the mood. And different books have been inspired by different music, but the character of Eleanor loves the singer John Prine. So John Prine songs are all through the book, and I was really grateful to his wife, Fiona Prine, for allowing me to quote lyrics in the way that Eleanor sings some of these songs to her children with her husband. John Prine also died of COVID very early on in the pandemic, and she experiences his death as the death of a friend. So there's John Prine. There's Leonard Cohen, and that song, it's a song called Anthem, I mentioned before. I actually, Sinead O'Connor died right as I was doing the final revisions of this book, and I spent an afternoon listening to Sinead O'Connor songs, and I thought, I need to put the death of Sinead O'Connor and a couple of those songs into this book. So yes, music is, if I had my choice at what I'd be good at, I'd probably be a musician. I'd probably be a singer. You should be very grateful that I'm not going to sing now, but I listen constantly. And so I filled this book up with the songs that my characters love, which aren't always the same ones as the songs that I love, but
they're different characters.
They're different characters. They're different characters.
So if they loved all the songs you loved.
And people will be able to find the playlist. It'll be on my website, which is just joycemaynard.com. They can download it on Spotify.
Okay. So I was going to ask you where people can find out more about you.
I recommend my website. I also have a really active Facebook page, and I post regularly, not just about my books, but about whatever's going on in my life. I really do consider readers part of I'm so grateful to readers because without readers, I couldn't do what I do and what I've been doing for over 50 years now. So Joyce Maynard Facebook, Joyce Maynard, the real Joyce Maynard Instagram, where you can always find out where I'm appearing next on this mega book tour of mine, and joycemaynard.com, which where I also will tell you about the writing workshops that I host and the hotel I run.
Fantastic.
I run a hotel on the shores of Lake Atitlan, Guatemala. You can read all about it.
Well, I was going to ask something silly, like, what do you do for fun? But it seems like you're just busy, busy, busy.
Well, I am, but I have to say I'm lucky. I love my work. I'm just back from a fabulous road trip with my daughter, Audrey. We went to see Bonnie Raitt, she means, I love her music, but I also love the fact that she's a woman in her 70s who's still on top of her game and going out into the world. I felt like, you know, calling out to her, Bonnie, I'm going on tour too. So, yeah.
I love it. Joyce, thank you so much for having this conversation. It's been absolutely wonderful. What fun.
And it is. This I do for fun. I get to talk to interesting women. What's more fun than that?
How the light gets in. Joyce, again, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, please share it with another person you think would be interested. And if you haven't already, please subscribe.
This has been a Life of Prey production.